You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
In the second part of a series of interviews we're conducting, we continue to try to explore what lessons there are to be learned from the COVID-19 pandemic, and whether or not this is an opportunity to rethink some of the old ways of doing things and rebuild the former economic, political, public health, work, and other structures in a better way that addresses issues like the widening gap in incomes between the affluent and those less fortunate, or perhaps with a greater sensitivity towards climate change.
That exacerbate.
In our first episode, we heard from climate consultant Edward Cameron, Vermont's Education Secretary Daniel French, and Manchester Community Library Director Violet Gannon. This time, we'll be hearing from William Colvin, the Assistant Director of the Bennington County Regional Commission, Alex Tranmer, a consultant with Camoin Associates, a consulting firm based in Saratoga Springs, New York, and Vermont Secretary of State James Condos.
Well, yeah, Bill, first of all, thanks for making the time to be with us today. What do you see as the main lessons learned or things that stand out in your mind when you consider that point?
Yeah, so, you know, as you point out, I think, unfortunately, we have some time to go here, and what the recovery from an economic perspective looks like, I think will continue to unfold. That said, I do think, if not lessons learned, there are some areas where I think we're seeing some trends emerging, and we'll see, you know, if those are long-term or not. And with regard to our regional business community, I think first and foremost, the word that I want to, you know, kind of focus on is resilience and flexibility. And I think we have seen that in spades already. And just, you know, for quick background, since March and the onset of the pandemic, BCRC and, you know, in conjunction with BCIC, which we staff, we've engaged with just under 400 businesses in some type of support role within the region. So that's 400 business contacts, some of those, you know, multiple times. But 400 business contacts, you know, in the last several months, in a variety of categories. Early on, those were helping to kind of understand what executive orders and essential businesses look like and how do we comply with those orders. What we saw, and I think there's an opportunity for this specific, we saw a quick transition by a number of businesses to increase their digital presence and literacy. So increased website design, how do I do a better job accepting online orders? How do I do more of my business online? So even as we emerge, you know, hopefully late spring, summer, into a more quote-unquote normal environment, I'm expecting that you're going to see a number of our retail providers maintain that online presence. And I think that probably is a positive, you know, for them. So some examples of resilience there and flexibility and a potentially positive trend. I think the other thing that we need to be paying attention to, and there's been a lot of press on this, is what portion of this kind of population in migration is going to stick, and what's that mean for our area, for the schools, and for our business community in the region. You know, you look at what's happened in Bonneville with regard to the change in population there as a result of, you know, people moving from more urban environments. We have talked about going way back to 2016 with the Southern Vermont Economic Development Zone report. It led off with Southern Vermont needs to repopulate itself. You know, I think some of that may be happening. Too early to tell how much of that, you know, how many of those folks are going to make a permanent home here. But, you know, if you believe the UVM study and kind of the articles that Digger and others have done, you know, at least a third of those folks are saying, we probably are going to stay here. And another third are suggesting, you know, we're not sure, but we could. I think that's the other thing that we're, you know, kind of paying attention to and trying to figure out what that means, for our business community.
So, well, just to follow up on that point, I mean, one of the big things I've read a lot about over the past 6 or 7 months has been about remote working. The point you were just referring to there, I believe, with Bonneville and Windhall, and the influx of new folks moving there. Do you see the future of office work, you know, gravitating more towards allowing people to work remotely from home, as opposed to, say, commuting into the office 5 days a week?
I think so. I think that will be. I think that will be a trend that will stick. I think, you know, had this been kind of a shorter term thing, which would have been good from a number of perspectives, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that would be the case. But now that we're 8 or 9 months in and have some time to go, and people are becoming accustomed to this work from home, I think there will be some offices that are going to provide additional telecommuting opportunities. I'll note, you know, a perfect example is our office at BCRC. So we're relocating in a couple of weeks to a new location in Bennington across the street at 210 South Street. The person who acquired our building has had intentions of moving in their offices all along. So mid-December, you know, we're relocating, and we are shrinking our office size by about 50%, going from about 3,300 square feet down to just over 2,000 square feet, with the understanding that, you know, some of BCRC staff is going to be working from home at least part-time, probably on an ongoing basis. So that provided some flexibility, you know, for us, and allowed us to kind of move into a smaller space. So I think that's a positive for a lot of businesses and a lot of people. Obviously, it's a negative potentially for the commercial real estate market that serves kind of that office market. So we will see. I think you're going to see some conversion down the road of what was commercial office space into other potential uses. What those are, you know, I'm uncertain. Perhaps residential, if that makes sense. We'll see with regard to retail. I think retail, we talked about online, you know, retail, physical brick and mortar retail was a challenge in our region pre-pandemic. It's going to continue, I think, to be a challenge, and people are really going to need to be creative and distinguish themselves in order to be successful long-term in that retail environment.
Out of the flux of all of this that's going on, do you see any indications that the whole climate change agenda is going to be top of mind for a lot of people? You know, we have the Global Warming Solutions Act coming into place, but this would seem like, with everything else kind of going on, a chance to maybe, you know, upgrade some climate-related aspects to the economy as well. Or is that just more likely to sort of get stuck in the same back and forth that we were seeing before the pandemic?
So I think there's some, you know, I think there's some national level leadership that is likely to change there. I think with a new administration coming in, obviously that administration is intending to make, you know, battling climate change a priority. Vermont has been at the forefront of that. So I do think there will be some opportunities there. And there may in fact be some opportunities in the green economy in our region. I think we're pretty well positioned to that as a state. We've been paying pretty close attention to sustainable energy and kind of energy as a business, you know, for some time now. So we'll see. I do think that's an opportunity. We'll see how those things get sorted out. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what the, is there a gradual return to kind of the, what was the normal? Is it a snapback to that, or is it something in between? And my gut tells me it's going to be something in between. I think people are going to want to get back to what was familiar to them as quickly as possible. But I do think we're going to see some changes that we're currently experiencing stick. You know, I, for one, am hopeful that, you know, meeting in this type of virtual format for state level meetings is something that sticks for quite a while. I don't miss driving 6 hours for a 2 hour meeting, you know, up and back to Montpelier, and frankly have found the meetings that we've been doing at a statewide level just as efficiently conducted in this format now that people are used to it. So, and that, that certainly benefits the climate, not having, you know, people from all over the state driving. Well, nobody drives quite as far as us, but up and back to Montpelier, but coming in from all corners of the state for a 2 hour meeting.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Certainly on the media side of things, I agree that it's hard to imagine us not continuing to do Zoom conversations a year from now or whenever. I guess just to wrap it up, what do you see as the most urgent priority coming out of this that when you talk with local legislators or state officials, what are you hearing from them and what are you telling them that they ought to be focusing on in the immediate months as we, you know, emerge out of this and the vaccine is distributed and things start to go back to quote unquote normal? Is there one or two things that really stand out that you're saying, hey, this has got to be top of the list?
Yeah. So, and our regional legislators, in particular, some really strong leadership from Senator Dick Sears have been focused on the hospitality sector. You know, that sector has really been decimated, both lodging and kind of restaurant. And, you know, just behind that is retail. And I think, you know, Senator Sears was instrumental with the Joint Fiscal Committee in getting additional monies allocated for recovery to the hospitality sector. I think the governor and the administration is also understanding about how important that is going to be. So we're obviously hopeful that there's going to be some additional round of federal stimulus. I think Vermont did an outstanding job in allocating the initial round of stimulus money out to its businesses to the best degree it could. I think it was pretty efficient getting the money out. I give major kudos to the Agency of Commerce and Community Development for standing up brand new programs and in conjunction with the tax department and getting those pretty efficiently run out to as many businesses as possible. Hospitality, including restaurants and retail, are going to need some major support for going forward. You know, all businesses are taking a hit. Our manufacturing sector was able to, I think, get through this and to this point, and will, I expect, continue to get through this at a better level. Those people have been able to largely keep their workforces on and intact. And again, it requires some flexibility and kind of reshifting of focuses, but, have been able to do that. But I think first and foremost, hospitality and retail are going to need some additional support.
What are some of the lessons or takeaways that you're seeing coming out of the whole COVID-19 pandemic experience of the last 8 months? Looking ahead, what do you think might be some of the things that we could kind of use this whole thing as an opportunity to fix some issues that were pre-existing? And how, just in general, do you see, things changing economically and in terms of community development and planning?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a challenging 8 months, that's for sure. And it's going to be a challenging road to recovery, I think it's fair to say. I think some of the things that, to summarize, I think we've seen trends that were already occurring, those things were accelerated. So the move to digitalization, so the move to making things digital across all industries, we hear about retail and that's certainly one of the things, but across all industries, whether that's office, life sciences, healthcare, we've seen move online for a variety of reasons, but I think that move to make things digital, that was on the precipice, and we've just seen that really accelerated in 8 months. And so the technology that is necessary to support that work, whether it's, broadband that we all keep hearing about, but, just general telecommunications, cell service still, you know, is really not widely available in some rural locations. And so I think the digital divide has been a big theme that's come out of the last 8 months.
And one of the things that's been a big change is, of course, the whole remote working aspect of life and the economy and everything. Do you think remote working is going to be something that will come out of this, that we'll continue to do? And a lot of companies will say, you know, we don't maybe need that big, gigantic office space anymore because all our people can work from home and do everything that they've been doing anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll say personally that Des Moines Associates has made that move. We've gone remote. So we no longer have our office in Saratoga Springs. And I think it's worked out quite well. I think we've seen that remote work can work. Again, this is something that was sort of on a more one-off basis and a trend that was continuing to happen, perhaps in co-working spaces. But I think we've seen remote work can work, that productivity has continued. The aspect that I think is, you know, still in the works for figuring out is workplace culture. How do you maintain that? How do you support your employees and, you know, keep a positive culture when you're, you know, maybe in different states, in different cities, maybe even in different countries? So I think there's still sort of a balance between, you know, how do we get employees together, how do we communicate, how do we collaborate, and whether that's perhaps at a co-working space one day a week or, you know, at a conference space, maybe you have a headquarters that you meet there every so often. But certainly the real estate for office, that's something that is going to see a lot of shifts in the coming year and something that we're going to watch closely.
Well, yeah, because the implications for commercial real estate in particular seem enormous. I mean, there's all this office space, not only in, you know, medium-sized towns like Saratoga, but, you know, larger cities where, you know, we got all these buildings here and maybe now we don't need half of that anymore. Do you think that that might be converted over into housing, or what might be some of the uses that will be put towards?
Absolutely. Yeah. Some of that conversation is already happening. I think housing is sort of top of the list for how do we repurpose some of this office space that is just, you know, obsolete if remote work continues. Maybe healthcare, you know, sort of the medical office, outpatient type of space, whether it could be repurposed to that. I think some of these discussions are definitely still ongoing. I think one of the other office sort of commercial real estate aspects is the like suburban office park that we've seen a couple different things. You know, the companies that have sort of flocked from major cities, San Francisco or New York, and gone to perhaps a more suburban location. So in that way, they've, you know, actually attracted some users. While previous to this, they were really becoming obsolete. Nobody wanted to be in the suburbs. They wanted to be in the central business district with the amenities. And now those suburban office parks have actually perhaps attracted a new light, a new tenant, and sort of thinking again about how to incorporate those amenities into the suburban office park so that it's not just the office space, but that you do have trails or restaurants or retail that works for the worker that might be there occasionally. So that sort of the patterns and lifestyles of workers is really all shifting and still being worked out.
So what implications does that have then for downtowns and in particular downtown retail? I mean, we're all, you kind of make downtowns distinctive and main streets, you know, kind of give it a lot of their character or...
Yeah, so we've seen the acceleration of online shopping for sure. And I think that uptake from populations or cohorts that might not typically have done that prior to March 2020, you know, those trends are probably here to stay. Those people that made the move to online shopping during the last 8 months are not likely to go back necessarily to their typical spending patterns. Like they've made the move to online shopping. So yeah, that is going to be an adjustment. I think, you know, again, it has been a challenging time, but the steps that retailers have taken to move themselves online, to move their inventory online, to look at their supply chains and, you know, think about, okay, wait, how can I meet the demand of right now, whether that's outdoor recreation or DIY and home building materials, things that were in high demand. You know, that's a big shift for retailers. I do think that downtowns and those small businesses, they still play a really important role in the sense of place for a community. And that's so important now with remote work and the ability of people to potentially, you know, pick up and move to a place that doesn't necessarily hold a job, but it holds a nice place. It holds, you know, the type of house they want, the type of downtown they want, the type of stores they want. It's really the community and lifestyle. And so I think those small retailers in downtown still play a huge role in building that sense of place. I think the other opportunity with rural locations as well, certainly the outdoor recreation, we've seen that industry take off in the last 8 months or so. And again, that's one of those things that you know, it's been a trend and sort of a pattern over the last 8 months, but I think it's been long enough that we've been in this pattern that I think people are, this isn't a temporary thing, that people are going to want to continue to get outside and experience the great outdoors. And so some of these rural locations really have access to those locations, and, you know, sort of making sure that they're maintained and sort of, you know, dusted off, for lack of a better word, due to this new activity, I think really have the potential to reinvigorate the economy. So I think one of the things that has come out of this pandemic as well in the field of economic development is really understanding that the relationships and trust and networks that economic developers have with their businesses prior to a crisis is so important, so that in a crisis, in a time of crisis, you're not trying to, you know, you're not trying to fix the crisis and get to know your businesses. Instead, you know, you might be able to anticipate needs of some small businesses or your major employer. Really having that network built in is so important for resiliency and being able to bounce back. Of course, it's going to be a challenge and it's still going to be difficult, but having that trust and those relationships established is so key to, you know, sending out those emails right away, deploying resources and understanding where the need is. And because this has been, you know, really such a long process, understanding along the way sort of the fluctuations and keeping up with the businesses along the way.
Thank you, Andrew, for having me on. And hopefully we'll be able to do something different in the future rather than do this by Zoom. In any case, I think this is the wave of the future is Zoom and whatever. I personally do support the concept of universal ballot mailing, but it needs to be done very carefully and very deliberately. We need to review all of our election laws. There are things that I think that we've learned in watching other states that have done this. You know, California and New Jersey were two of the bigger states that actually moved to vote by mail as well. We have five states that do it already permanently. And there are things that we can learn from all of those states. We need to focus on getting to the right solution, not the fastest solution or quickest solution. We still have a lot of unanswered questions, and we have lessons to be learned from 2020. Keep in mind that everything we did in 2020 revolved around the pandemic. So what we were trying to do was drive down the number of in-person people walking in-person traffic at the polling locations. And I think we did that because if you look at the numbers, first of all, we had a very high voter turnout, both in the primary and in the general election, although they were both run a little bit different. But in the general election with vote by mail, we smashed the previous record by 45,000 voters or something in the state. We had 374,000 ballots that were cast. Of that 374,000, 280,000 of those were vote by mail or early drop off. So people who had received their ballots at home but preferred to drop it off at the town clerk's office rather than mail it back. So 280, that's 75% of the vote tally was actually done through the vote by mail or drop off. We know we increased voter access for voters with disabilities, voters with difficult work schedules, and voters with children, just to name a few instances. And I think those last two, the difficult work schedules and voters with children, became more apparent this year with the pandemic as more and more people were working from home, working remotely. So we do have some questions that came out as a result. One of the key questions is, frankly, the ability to cure if you have a defective ballot. Under current law, there is no cure process. It's not allowed. Once the ballot leaves the voter's hand, it becomes the if you want to call it the ownership of the clerk. And you can't ask for it back. You can't ask to correct what was wrong. So we need to look at that. Although I am very pleased to say we had less than 0.5% of our total vote cast in the general election that had defective ballots. So that was, and that's, it's still a large enough number to be concerned about. That was 1,400 ballots roughly. And obviously we want on every ballot to count, but we need to figure out if we did something wrong with the process. We also need, if we're going to make this permanent, we need to decide how we're going to mail out the ballots. Are we going to do it centrally? Are we going to do it from the clerk's offices? I think they originally wanted to be able to be the ones that were mailing them out, but I think as we got closer to it, they realized how simple we made it by doing it the way we did, and we had very, very few problems. We need to know some of the other questions that we have to ask ourselves are how and where are the ballots received and then processed? What we did in this election, trying to keep things to a minimal as far as change, was we had the ballots go back to the town clerk's office, but even they were inundated with a lot of mail coming in. So we had about 175 out of 246 towns that had secure ballot drop boxes, whether they were a mail slot into the office, an interior wall-mounted, or an exterior stand-up, almost like a mailbox. So we need to look at whether there are requirements, security requirements that we need to improve and increase for secure ballot boxes. We also, we had affidavit requirements for voters who lost or never received their mail ballots. There's just a lot of changes. And then one of the things that came up, although we felt it was not necessary because of our history, but also because we provided our clerks with the ability to process ballots up to 30 days ahead of time. They would, the process was set up. They would not know who was winning or losing. All they would know is how many ballots they had processed. We want to make sure we have the right solution, not the fastest solution. I can't say right now whether we would have everything in place. We might do like a hybrid in 2022 if the legislature goes along with it, and then permanently set it up for starting in 24. There's a lot of moving parts that we have to look at, as I just went through.
We hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll be back for our next round of guests, which will include a group of economic and planning leaders from Windham County. For now, for the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.